Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I talk to singer-songwriter, promoter, jack of all trades, Tom Bright, and it's a lovely chat. It's the first time that Tom and I have virtually met. We've been speaking on the phone and we've been doing, you know, little bits and pieces together with his work at Isn't on Radio. So it's really nice to get to sit and chat at length, really. And as you're about to find out, he's a wonderful guy. And well, before we get on with the episode, a few thank yous. So big thanks to Scroobius Pip and everyone at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76 for producing this episode. And thanks to you lovely listeners, just for being lovely and consistently just saying, you know, positive things and liking and sharing and retweeting and just supporting the podcast. And it really does, you know, it does matter. And it really makes me sort of feel that what I'm doing is doing something, you know, positive and user enjoying it. So yeah, just a massive thanks to yous. If this is your first time listening, then I should point out that there's about 350 episodes of this podcast available. So once you've finished your chat, you'll listen to me chatting with Tom, then why not go and explore the back catalogue? Because you can hear me chatting to a huge array of artists, from Fatboy Slim to David Gray, to Texas, to Fatboy Slim, to Motley Crue, to Foo Fighters, to Sway, to Idols, to Sleaford Mods, Maxine Peake, Amanda Abington, Joe Hartley, Thomas Turgoose, Michael Smiley, Butch Vig, you know, that guy that produced Nevermind, Butch Vig. There's stacks, all your favourite DJs, musicians, actors, artists, producers. Go have a rummage and you'll find something that I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to. If you'd like to support the podcast, this is a completely independent thing I do. You can support the podcast by going to my Patreon page. That's Patreon, patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. And over there, if you want to sign up for 79p a month, you get weekly radio shows, you get video episodes, and a back catalogue of maybe 200 or so shows that have never been released to the general public. So, yeah, any support over there, 79p a month. I don't know what that works out, a week. What's that? 20, just under 20p a month, a week? That's not a lot, is it? And it all goes in the pot to help make this podcast. So you can support me over there. Or otherwise, if pennies are tight, then just give us a like, love, share, retweet, subscribe. That helps. Leave us a comment. And yeah, just get the word out. And I'll love you forever. You can find out about everything you need to know about this podcast at your one-stop shop, www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right, ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Tom Bright. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the Cacao Bar, and there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to, and all you've got to do is, just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in Off the Beaten Track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Tom, how you doing, mate?
I'm very well, Stu. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I mean, we should say that we sort of know each other. We've been chatting to each other for probably about a year. I was doing shows with you
on Tinder
on the radio show, which we'll talk about on the radio station, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, as this unfolds. But we've never met, so we're virtually meeting at the moment on Zoom, and I'm sure, you know, now that things are changing, that we'll get an opportunity and I can get to come to the pub and sample your own beer, which, again, I'm sure we'll talk about. But just whilst we sort of touch on that we're coming out of this situation, I just want to not probably start on the most positive notes, but just to look back over the last sort of, you know, 15, 16, 17 months, however long it's been now, it's a blur. And I just want to ask how you found it, Tom, personally and creatively.
Well, when the doo-doo hit the fan, as it did with all of us, it was like a tsunami taking the sails of your ship. So, overnight, everything I'd built up over 8 years of grafting was gone, because my bread and butter was all live music, all gigs, blah, 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 whether it be my own touring or events I put on in London as a promoter or whatever. So, that took a bit of adjustment. I left London straight away. I was living in Tottenham at the time, and obviously we were all kind of wondering how apocalyptic the world would become.
Sure.
So my mum called me. She was like...
As dramatic as that sounds, that's true though, isn't it?
It was, mate. I mean, because we didn't know, did we? It was like we'd had the ultimate fear pumped into
100%.
Us. And it was like, right, I can't even buy a bag of pasta at Tesco. So I better get out of here. So I chipped off. I went to Derbyshire.
Is that home?
That's home for me, Little Eaton, Derbyshire. And I mean, there's more sheep than people there, really. So it was at least I was able to get the headspace and get out for my daily walk, which I stretched out for about 5 hours at a time. But you know what? I made the most out of my time. We'll talk about it through the course of this show, but I did a lot. I've probably, and up to this point now, I would say that the past 18 months, I've probably worked harder than ever, partially out of a need to, because I always think that, you know, there's no better motivation than to need to make things work as opposed to want. So, it's all been a bit of a mind blast, but yeah. It's been one that I think we're going to be able to look back on and go, all right, that was, I've come out of that stronger.
I agree. I think there's been, you know, so much reflection and I think that hopefully as much as a lot of people have had a lot of wobbles mentally, and a lot of people have had a horrific time of it and lost people, and taking nothing away from any of that, of course. But I do think that creatively, especially if you work in sort of industries that you know, the creative industries, I think there's always that fundamental punk ethos of, like, when you're stripped of what you normally do, you've got to go, right, well, look, what have I got to play with here, and what can I do with that? And I think from that, a lot of the times, some real great stuff can come out of that.
Of course, and obviously, it was inevitable that we would be, you know, in the entertainment and hospitality fields all together. We were always going to be the kind of last to get back to what we were doing.
Mm.
Mm. As you know well yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You've had to think outside the box.
Yeah. Oh, mate, it's like I've had to spin a few plates. I really have. And but it's been fun. And I mean, we can talk about you know, setting up the radio station, because that was something that I was, you know, I was tucking myself away in my little studio at the end of the garden, which was an absolute blessing to have that, to be able to kind of just go and get out of the house and take some time away from the family, who I'm sure were probably just as happy to have rid of me as well, you know, to get a bit of headspace. And I'd go down there and I'd play records and I'd chat about them, and I'd throw them out to me podcast listeners. If they wanted it or not, they were getting it, because it was just an opportunity for me to kind of just get a bit of headspace and offload. And then what come about was I saw that you'd launched a radio station. So tell us a little bit about that, Tom. I'm aware that we haven't even started on your first track yet, but I think, you know, it's a good place to kind of get this rolling now before we start talking records.
Of course, of course. So, yeah, kind of got to me being out of London for about 6 months. I released my first album in May last year, and then I got my head down, I wrote a book, wrote the second album, got that recorded. And then when I moved back to London at the end of the August last year, that was when Islington Radio started to become an idea and what it would be and what it would aim to do. And, you know, just kind of, it was myself and my mate Terry, who is in Islington Radio with myself. He has the Archway Tavern as well, and he'd taken that over literally in March last year, so he had to keep that open through the whole time, as you know how difficult that would have been for anyone. And he said, look, you know, I want to do this radio station, Islington Radio, this left field alternative kind of underground station that's not going to tick any kind of bog standard broadcast boxes, which is right up my street. You know, I like to do things away from the norm. So I started thinking about what that could be, who could be involved. Reached out to yourself, of course, along with many other people that we thought were interesting and were doing good things and just seems like they were on the same wavelength as us and what we were aiming to do. And over the course of a couple of months, the team of DJs was assembled, started putting out the first shows as a bit of a taster. And you know what? The whole thing's just been very organic. I think that you've got to learn to walk before you can run. So that's why, you know, I've not really kind of set any, like, this is where we're aiming to go. This is what all I know is we're doing cool things. You know, we've got a beer, got a pub, putting on a music festival now. You know, it's kind of like a renaissance mission, kickstarting everything up again, and we'll see where things go. But when you put good people together, you're always going to do good things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's talk about some good things. Track one. Tom, tell me the song with the greatest ever intro, please.
My opinion. I Want to Be Adored by the Stone Roses. I'm a massive Stone Roses fan. In fact, John Squire signed my guitar, and he's like my favourite guitarist.
How, when and where did this happen?
it happened at Mick Jones's studio, Mick Jones from The Clash.
Yeah.
I was doing a fair bit of work down there, recording my first tracks with Mick, and it was a big scene, like the Rotten Hill Gang, his band based over that way, full of rock and roll legends, Glenn Matlock, Guy Pratt, there's loads and loads of cool people in that club. And yeah, well, Julian Temple was directing Rotten Hill TV for, I think they were going to pitch it to Sky Arts. And I was playing a track, and John was there. And yeah, we got chatting, and I had my guitar with me. And I think the week before, Johnny Marr had actually signed my guitar.
Fucking hell, Tom. Seriously, man. Like, where is this place, man? Where can I hang out? Like,
bonkers, isn't it? So, just kind of said to John, oh, I think actually John actually said, is that Johnny Marr? Because I was like, yeah. He goes, and then he signed the guitar. So, yeah. That's a funny Stone Roses story. I love this track. I love this album. You know, what a way to start a record. It's a very important record, this one. And the intro is just great. I love it when the bass comes in. It all comes together. And I Want to Be Adored. What a simple, significant line.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I can't believe in 350 episodes no one's ever chose that. Because it's a monster intro, and as soon as I hear it, I mean, don't get me wrong, I've been playing that record in my club for probably 30 years now, and it still gets the same response from 18-year-old kids now as it did in 1989, which is testament to the fact that band was doing something very, very special.
Absolutely, still things don't sound like that, even though how many bands I've tried to sound like that, but, you know, you've got Squires, the way he plays that guitar, and it's so sad to think that he doesn't pick the thing up now, because, like, he's just the most gifted guitarist, I think, that last, well, him and Johnny Marr, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. He likes a paintbrush, though, doesn't he, Squire?
Loves a paintbrush. He loves chucking paint at stuff, and, yeah, in fact, I've got a big print of his. I think I've got the waterfall print.
Nice.
On canvas, yeah.
Nice. Well, in regards to how you approach songwriting, Tom, I've been spending maybe 2 years trying to get this question right, and I never quite frame it as I want it to sort of come across. But from the days when Stone Roses released that record, the way that people listen to music, the way that people could access music, is far different from how it is now. You know, obviously you've got anything you want within 2 seconds now, you know, on your phone or your laptop, wherever you listen to your music. And it would appear from me casually sort of like looking over my kids' shoulders at their thumbs, how quickly they seem to be swiping and moving and attention spans are shrinking. And so with all of that in mind, does that ever kind of, you know, the way that music is, you know, ingested and you know, in some kind of pop markets, it's almost looked upon as like a sort of science now and a formula to getting that pop track right. Do any of these things filter into your songwriting process? Do you get where I'm going with this question?
I get where you're going, of course. And, you know, if you talk to anyone in A&R or labels or whatever, they'll always say you've got to get the attention in 20, 30 seconds. And I think that if you've got to be very clear on the reasons why you're doing what you're doing. You know, when I was starting out, obviously I wanted to sign to my dream label and you know, headline the biggest festivals, blah, blah, blah. And I've done amazing things. I've lived a beautiful life and done things I never thought I would do. And now, you know, you kind of get to your mid-30s, and I know I'm still young, but you do start thinking, you know, I'm not a kid anymore. And I'm happy with the music I make, and I think I've got quite a varied fan base, quite a mature crowd. A lot of the songs are very lyrical and stuff. So I think less about the getting the attention span in 5 seconds, personally. Although, naturally, it seems to happen. I write 3-minute tracks consistently. The chorus is always there in the first 40 seconds. But, yeah, I think now if you're in like the, if you're really in like the pop world and, you know, you've got to cater for that kind of TikTok audience.
Yeah.
You've got to consider so many things like ahead of the actual song itself.
Do you think there's longevity in that, Tom?
Like, I don't. And that's why I don't kind of go with it. I don't do TikTok. I don't do any of this kind of... I just feel like it's very, very fake and can't be healthy. Yeah. And I genuinely believe that the bubble, even if the bubble doesn't burst, I don't believe that that is the way you have to live your life to be popular or successful.
Mate, style will always outweigh the fashion.
Always.
Right, I'm going to take you back, Tom. First song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
I mean, music, I was always obsessed, even though I wasn't actually musical. And I was very late to picking up a guitar myself. So I think as I got older, I became more emotionally attached to music. And growing up, I was into, you know, the Blur, Oasis, blah, 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 blah. But I heard this particular song at a particular time, which was a really sad event, the saddest event in my life to that point. And it was, Last Goodbye by Jeff Buckley. And it was just like an unforgettable, like, where a song floors you, basically.
Yeah, Jeff Buckley's good at that.
He's pretty good at that, isn't he?
Yeah.
That old Grace record, really, is a bit of an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, absolutely. So where was home growing up? Leeds?
No, Derbyshire.
Derbyshire.
Village in Derbyshire, Little Eaton. I was born in Germany. I was born in Berlin, and a few things happened. Ended up flying to London. I went to my first nursery school in London, and then I moved to Derbyshire when I was three and a half. So, yeah, I was in Derbyshire till I was 22. I became a pub landlord there when I was 18. And then we sold that when I was like 22 and a half, nearly 23. That's when I picked up a guitar and came out of the pub. I flew one way to Sydney, Australia, and I travelled all around and played my first gigs and stuff, and then moved to London January 2013. And that was, ever since then, it's just been kind of focusing on doing the thing.
I mean, that's an adventure.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It's an adventure, isn't it?
Just a bit. Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor. Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. How was it? I mean, it does sort of feel like there's very much sort of two sides to the coin there. You mentioned earlier in the chat that where you brought up there was more sheep than people. And so how was that growing up in a very sort of quiet, I presume, village?
Yeah.
How was that?
Loved it. And I still need my my green therapy hit regularly, really. You know, I think growing up in countryside for a childhood is just, it's awesome. Yeah. You've obviously got different dangers. You know, it's more of like, you know, even though it's safer in a lot of ways, you know, you've kind of, when things get very natural and you can go out and, I mean, I did also, I was a bit crazy really growing up. But yeah, it was phenomenal. And to be surrounded by greenery, it's become a massive part of the way I am, really. Although, weirdly, and, you know, kind of unexplainably, I always felt that I would end up residing in London, to be honest. And now I do. I don't know if I'd ever be able to live anywhere, even though maybe I could live in multiple places at the same time. But, yeah, I love London, and I would miss it.
Was home musical growing up? Is there records
on? No, not at all. Music on, mainly radio, really. My grandma was a big part of my growing up, and she'd always have her old school radio on, so that's kind of where I got my love for all the Rat Pack stuff and Sinatra and everything. That was kind of my first favourite kind of genres were swing. But no, not a musical home. I'm not from musical parents at all. Mum was a nurse for 46 years. She was in the army for 10. My dad was in the army for 22 years. So,
never fancied
military
that
background. No, never. Not at all. no way. It's really not, you know, not me, that isn't. But yeah, that's what, hence why I was born in Berlin, actually. I was born in the British Military Hospital.
Okay. Well, in those formative years, I want to ask you about school now. And so, for track three, Tom, can you tell me something that reminds you of your time at school, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this song I'm going to choose, it actually came out many, many years before I went to school, but me and my group of mates, we called ourselves the all-weather crew, because whether it was snowing, raining, whatever, we would be out every Friday on park benches drinking 2 litres of white cider and... an age way, way, way too young to be doing that as well.
One of the things that people never reference when they talk about them 2 litre bottles of cider, it certainly was the case with me, and I think this is where you really develop as a human being and learn out of stomach some really fucking grim stuff. Them 2 litres of white cider, it was always warm. It was never at the fridge because you couldn't get them bottles in the fridge. They were so fucking big. You'd take it off the shelf. Warm, mate. At one point, I remember my mate used to stand, we used to take turns to stand behind each other's shoulders. And so when we'd sort of guzzle it, one of us would steady the shoulders as you literally shuddered as he was trying to neck this warm cider. 8%. Fucking gross, man.
I remember the first time as well. I mean, we're talking about the age of 12, 13. I mean, it was, you know, we were pretty mad. And I think I might have been on antibiotics at the time.
Valid.
Chest infection. So that sorted me out. And, so this song, Baggy Trousers, one of the many tunes that we'd have blasting out of our CD Walkman. And, baggy trousers, here we go.
Living somewhere, you know, in a small village, you know, in the all-weather crew, when you'd hear stuff like Madness, what was you picturing? Was you picturing, did it sound, and because for me as well, like, Madness is one of my favourite bands, and I'm a lot older than you, and for me, growing up and seeing Madness videos and Madness, it screamed London to me. Did it feel like something you could relate to, or did it feel very London from what you was hearing and what you were seeing?
It felt very London. I think I choose that song in particular because, you know, lyrically it's, you know, naughty boys in nasty school, but it is so London.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's got to be one of the romantic things about it as well, you know.
100%. It's well documented on this podcast that I think that band are criminally underrated as songwriters. 100%.
Definitely.
People throw
unbelievable songs.
Do you know what I mean? And it's so weird. I think, you know, people constantly sort of, when talk about London, reference the Kinks, and I'm taking nothing away from them bands. I love the Kinks, but you look at the body of work that Madness have put out and the lyrical content of some of them songs, you know, you listen to, you know, songs like Baggy Trousers and Embarrassment, you know, you listen to like songs like that. And I think because of the novelty videos that they done back in the day and stuff like that, I think that kind of detracts from the how credible they are as songwriters and as a band. And I think they don't get the respect that they deserve, Madness. I think they're absolutely incredible band, and I'll generally take any opportunity I can on this podcast to rant about that, because I think they're a wonderful band.
What is your favourite Madness tune?
Probably Embarrassment, or do you know what? I really like Love Struck that come a lot later. But
nice
Bed and Breakfast, man. Oh, this says too many, mate.
Michael Caine. I love it.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Or sell of everything about it.
Yeah, like it is. It is like, and that was weird because, I mean, again, that's when like Madness went from being the Nutty Boys to, you know, a serious band. Like Michael Caine is a completely serious song. There's no jokes to that. Do you know what I mean? It's wonderful. So tell me about school. How was it?
It was very good. Well, I mean, I'll say it was very good. I never really did very well. When you're kind of growing up and, you know, you think a little bit differently, you're never going to do that well in a kind of institutionalised environment. And the only things I was ever any good at, I was very good at English literature, and I was very good at drama. And I was good at music, even though I didn't really play anything. I got caught singing by the teacher, and she pulled me into the choir.
Tom, has your mic moved at all?
I might have been covering it.
There we go. Lovely, you're back.
So, yeah, do you want me, shall I say that again?
No, it's fine, man. Let's just keep rolling. I'll try not to edit. I like it to be pretty organic, right, mate.
Cool. So, yeah, school for me, I went to a secondary school that prided itself on its excellence in the county. And if you were one of the academics, you would do very well and you would get all the support you needed. if you weren't so good, you'd get chucked into basics. And yeah, so my science, maths, and kind of everything that really is seen in society as mattering, I wasn't very good at. I was very good at English, and I was good at drama, and I was good at music. And honestly, beyond that, I was pretty bad. I wasn't crap, because I always knew that I was actually quite a smart lad. I trusted my brain, and I knew that if I connected to something, it all went in like I soaked it up like a sponge. And if I just did not connect with something, or even worse, the teacher, we just didn't connect, then I'd be a bit of a nightmare, to be honest. I was very good at art. I was really, you know, I look back and I was actually an artist, because I would do these drawings and paintings that didn't really look like anything or look like anyone's. But, you know, if you kind of look at art and the way it should be, it was original stuff. And my art teacher absolutely hated me. And it just really ruined my kind of development, and I ended up dropping it.
Yeah.
And I think that is the main problem with education now. And I will say this till I'm blue in the face, because I feel in a lot of ways I got left out to dry by the education system. And I remember not getting the grades to stay on at school and kind of getting binned off and being made to feel like a bit of a dunce, to be honest. And then I had to go to college to kind of do a foundation year to get my grades back up to go to college and do A-levels, which I did. But luckily, at the age of 18, I took a pub over with my mum and became a pub landlord, which taught me way more than an education system ever will. School was weird. I had a great time socially, and I was probably a little bit too much of a class clown at times, but the support from teachers, I didn't get it one bit.
Was you a show off?
Yeah.
I didn't even hesitate.
Yeah, I think I was, mate. I think I was just a showman. I was just a bit of a...
Was you confident?
I was confident. And, you know, I was always... I'm going to say it. I was always quite funny, you know. And
yeah.
And if anyone... I was Mr. Reliable when it comes to cracking a gag and putting yourself on the line to make everyone laugh. That, unfortunately, resulted in one too many bollockings. but, you know, in hindsight, you look back, I'm glad I wouldn't change anything.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tom, tell me the first song you bought from a record shop, please.
Right, I'm going to... Because I can't really remember individual song, but I do remember record, and I think that one of the singles was from this record, actually. Marshall Mathers LP, Eminem. I loved him.
Yeah.
I loved everything about him. Early Eminem was brilliant. And, you know, I think I'm the lyrical stuff, and seeing this guy that was clearly not your normal guy,
yep,
doing far from your normal thing that is to be expected, and to bang out lyrics like that, it just totally resonated with me. And I was obsessed, actually.
I think in years to come, people are going to look back and I mean, don't get me wrong, he's obviously very, very well respected, but I think, you know, in future generations are going to look back and as you said, for all them reasons, it doesn't make sense on paper, but you know what he delivered, you know, was, you know, it's pretty much sort of genre defining, really. And I
genius,
think, yeah, absolutely, like lyrically, just off the scale. Yeah, I think there's, and I think also if that drops, in your kind of formative teen years as well. I mean, that's your punk right there, isn't it?
It was. It really was. And it was, I mean, those first two albums, the lyrics on that, some of the tunes, it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know where his head was, or, you know, he's clearly not had the best time growing up. I think, you know, subconsciously, I probably related to a few things here and there. And, yeah, just soaked it up like a sponge, mate. Loved it.
Yeah. And Tom, as an independent artist, like, how important are record shops for you now?
Well, they're vital, really. And I know that loads of people get sidetracked now. And, you know, they're all chasing, everyone's chasing streams, everyone's chasing monthly listeners, and they all want a million streams on a track and everything. And I get it, and you've got to have, I know you've got to have everything on point, but something's going to come along and it's going to blow the streaming world apart. I do believe it. Might not be yet, but there's going to be some changes. What I don't think will ever go away is the real music lovers who want to buy a physical bit of music. It's not just about buying a vinyl or a limited edition CD with a lyric booklet to flick through. And, you know, it's more just like buying something to buy into that person that you just feel like, that is a bit of me.
Yeah.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is, like, you know, I'm speaking probably, like, from my experience of, like, me and my friends. It's like, and I use an example of an artist, Billy No Mates, and when I first heard her, and I was lucky to get to chat to her on here, her music blew me away. And yes, it was on Spotify and I could put it on a playlist, but I'm like, okay, right. And I was, every one of my mates that I turned onto that, I know for a fact that every single one of us went online, bought a record, and it's the case, because I want to own it. I don't know if it's just my generation that still like something tangible. I like album artwork, and I don't get that when I'm on Spotify. Yeah. I like to look at it while I'm listening to it. You know, maybe that's just because I was brought up like that. But I do think in a world where everything's virtual and everything's, you know, on your phone, I do think that, you know, people do still like to have something. And if it's
like,
yeah, and I'm, whatever's coming around the corner, Tom, to kind of switch things up, then yeah, I'm waiting as well, mate, and I can't wait to see what it's going to be.
The world's always going to change and evolve and stuff, but I think there's enough people in the world to always, there's always going to be space for everyone. Like, there's always people like me are going to get older, and I'm going to always buy a bit of music, and you know, my fan base who I know will buy records, you know, they're going to keep going and they're going to pass on their viewpoint, and it will all coexist.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, you know, there's a reason whenever you walk in Rough Trade East that there's a shitload of people in there, because it's the experience of it as well. It's the journey of going and buying something. You know, it's like, oh, where'd you get that? Oh, I bought that in Rough Trade. Yeah, I went there. I bought that day as well. And it's like attaching something to it. You know, that journey of like, got my bag, got my record, I'm going to go home and I'm going to put it on. And when I put it on, I'm going to have a little read through the notes and find out a bit more about that artist. And there's, yeah, it's the journey that I love of things like that as well.
Yeah, and Rough Trade are class. I mean, they stocked my first, they still do stock my first album vinyl, and they sold loads thanks to them pushing it and stuff. And now all the pre-orders for my second album, they're all running through Rough Trade. And yeah, from what I gather, there's been a lot of orders go in. So there's a market there. It's and, you know, obviously Rough Trade is, you would say that it's the destination
100%
globally now, wouldn't you? I mean,
definitely.
Well, maybe not globally, but, you know, for UK and
100%
US.
100%. Tell me the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing, Tom.
Right, so clubbing, I was never much of a clubber, but what we did used to do was, as previously mentioned, we do big outdoor gatherings on park benches with white cider, and we carried on doing this till we were a bit too old to be, in the eyes of a lot, should be doing it. And these became kind of outdoor raves in the pissing rain. And we got banging to drum and bass and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, Original Nutter by Shy FX. I love this track.
Still holds up, mate. Still holds up.
Oh, I loved it. And I'm from a village called Little Eaton. I remember thinking that it actually said Little Eaton Boy in the lyric. Brilliant.
Love it.
Little Eaton Boy. So, yeah, so,
and so did you sort of venture into sort of, you know, I guess by the time you moved to London, it probably would have been around the time that, I guess, indie clubbing was rife, I imagine. And did that ever kind of filter through, or was it pubbing, yeah, or clubbing, or what was it?
I've always been a pub man, and I love sitting down in a boozer and having a pint of ale. That is a bit of me, and a gig. You know, I mean, I've been gigging since I started, and relentlessly, you know. So give me a pub with a proper music venue out the back, and that is the ideal.
Yeah, yeah, amen to that, mate.
Few and far between, you know, that it's tough to get them, isn't it?
Yep.
You know, you've got, they're there, and luckily on my next tour, there's some real crackers on there. But yeah, a lot of them are kind of, you know, it's a bar and a stage. But yeah, nice pub and 100-cap room out the back, perfect.
And let's just hope a lot of them have made it through the last sort of 16 months. Just before lockdown, I don't know if you've have heard of a band called David Devantney's Spirit Wife. And they're a band I grew up on. And I hadn't been to the oh, God, what's the bloody venue called? Since I literally played it in the 90s. Over by, oh, God. It's next to the venue, which I now can't think what that's called either. Oh, bloody hell. The Club Mutt Pop Stars was there. Oh, God, what's the venue called?
It will come to you.
Not Hope and Anchor. What is it, Whitechapel Way? No, it'll come to me. Anyway, but that was, I hadn't been there for so long, and it was so nice to just literally walk in, have a pint in the pub, and then know that I got my tickets, and then walk through to this like 100-150 cap venue and just watch a band. And it was just glorious, and I hadn't done it for a while, and it was just like, I don't want to overplay it, but it did feel like coming home. Do you know what I mean? It had been so long since I'd sort of done that, and it was I'm saying this, but all that's going on in my head now is trying to remember what the name of the bloody venue is, but it will come to me. King's Cross. It's in King's Cross.
Water rats,
of course it's the Water Rats. Yeah, cool. Yeah, first thanks, mate.
I mean, proper, innit?
Yeah,
that's one of them.
Yeah, I'll sleep well tonight now I've got that out of my system. All right, I'm gonna take you home. Track 6, favourite song from an artist from your home county, please, Tom.
Do you know what? This is a tough one, because my home county, Derbyshire, and I will go on record saying this, has not produced great artists.
What have you got to play with? What's in the mix?
There's not many, mate. I mean, really, you look through the... Tell me a band from Derby. You know...
Was White Tan from Derby?
They shot a video in Derby, but they were not from Derby.
Right.
They shot a video in Derby for the...
Your
the
Woman.
Big track that they did. Yeah. Yeah.
He used to run a night club in Derby, that fella, Joetti.
Right.
And I went to it and to watch David Devant and his spirit wife, bizarrely, that I've just mentioned. So that was my only time venturing into Derby, and I thought that was where they were from, but there you go. I stand corrected. So
we've got a big band from Derby at the minute called The Struts. But, you know, if you kind of, you look at bands that have come out, I mean, it's Nottingham has bands in abundance, Sheffield, blah, 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 blah. So I had to do a bit of digging, actually. But I did actually, and I did this yesterday, I kind of dug vintage acts that came from Derbyshire. And there was an act, a singer-songwriter, not too dissimilar to myself, back in the 60s, 70s, called Kevin Coyne. And I found this track, and I found this yesterday, and it's called I'm Just a Man. And I'm going to go with this because it's actually a cracking tune.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, let's, whilst we're talking about sort of finding new stuff, this is an opportunity to give someone another one as well, because for track 7, Tom, it's a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
It is a track that a lot won't know, and he's a very, very good friend of mine, an artist called Sam Brooks, Brooks with ES on the end. Yeah. Now, we've been long-time collaborators. He's co-written a song on my upcoming second record. We've done a lot of gigs together, a lot of touring around Europe together. And he put out his third album last year. Absolutely beautiful. Beautiful record. He's done three phenomenal albums, actually. And this song called Granite is on his new album. And it's beautiful. And he played it for me the first time. We were in France, just about to do a gig together. And the minute he played it, I was just like, man, that's gorgeous. So, yeah, Granite by Sam Brooks.
So how did you and Sam kind of meet?
Right, we met. We met, he was opening up for someone at a gig I went to in Derby, at a place called The Flower Pot. And I was only just starting out in music. I think I'd been playing the chord C for 2 weeks at this point. I went to a gig with my mate and he was opening up, and he was just class. And I went up to him at the end, as you do, people like we, I bought a CD off him, he signed it, and I got a chat and I said, mate, you know what, I've just started teaching myself how to play the guitar. And he actually wrote on this CD, good luck with the guitar in, you know. I went off to Australia, blah, 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 blah. A few years pass, I'm living in London, and I'd got a studio with a couple of mates in Bermondsey, and we started doing these sessions. And I reached out to Sam's manager because I'd been following his career up to this point. And we got Sam down for a session. We did a few live tracks and yeah, we just became mates. And then, you know, you connect with certain people, don't you? And they do become friends and important people in your life. And one thing led to another. We ended up doing loads of gigs together and writing together. And just, you know, over the course of years, we've become, you know, he's become one of my best friends. So, yeah, that's just the beauty of being on the same wavelength as people.
Nice.
And he's been quite a, I would say, quite an inspiration, actually. He's because he's, you know, an independently releasing artist who has, you know, just got on with it and worked his socks off. And that's exactly what you've got to do when you do what we do.
Absolutely. Well, people can go and check that out, Tom, because we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast, so people can go and listen to all of the tracks that we've spoke about today. And obviously we'll put some of your music on there as well. And yeah, as we sort of find ourselves venturing into the latter half of 2021 and it, you know, looking like it's going to be a far more happy and connected and positive time than maybe the first half of this year. With that in mind, Tom, what are you looking forward to for the rest of this year personally, and what's happening professionally?
Well, I'm looking forward to putting together in September 10th to the 12th Islington Radio Festival in the new Islington Radio Live Room at the back of the Archway Tavern. It's going to be, September with the Joe Strummer Foundation. It's going to be a great 3-day free entry festival after no festivals for so long. Mm-hmm. And then my next album is out on the 12th of November. The singles have been given some mega, mega love from Guy Garvey on Six Music and John Kennedy, Radio X, loads and loads of love so far. I'm really proud of the record, produced by my good friend and just all-round genius, Ed Harcourt. And I'm going to be touring the album and, in a lot of ways, touring the first album, because I had to cancel that album tour last year. So touring in November starts on the 8th of November in... where does it start again? The Clooney in Newcastle.
Yep.
And it goes to the Sunflower Lounge in Birmingham, the Lexington in London on the release night, 12th of November. And then we've got the Brunswick in Brighton, Louisiana in Bristol, the Castle in Manchester, and the Poetry Club in Glasgow. So, yeah, it's going to be great to do a few miles in my Peugeot. And get back to it properly, you know, and do what I do best and love most, you know. Lovely. So can't wait.
Lovely.
And I hope to see you there, mate. Come down the Lexington, please.
Let's do it. Let's do the Lexington. Tommy, it's been an absolute pleasure talking records with you, mate. It's been pleasure, so much mate. Fun. Thank you.
And you're as good looking as you look on your Instagram, mate. So I look forward to it. Yeah, I look forward to a pint in person, mate.
100%. Thanks, mate. Thank you very much, Tom Bright. What an absolute gen. It's really nice. Sometimes you just kind of, you meet people and they've just got an energy that you kind of sort of bounce off of. I knew that was going to be a great chat. You know, we'd spoken on the phone several times. I love the sort of approach to how he does all of his kind of, you know, creative ventures. I really kind of enjoy being around people like that, and it fires me up, it inspires me, and so I knew that we was going to have a lovely natter, and I hope you guys and gals really enjoyed listening to that, because I really enjoyed having that chat. I'm back next time. In the meantime, go explore the back catalogue. I mentioned a load of names at the beginning, but I'm not going to keep rattling them all off, because there's over 350 episodes out there now for you. But it's a who's who of, the world's finest musicians, actors, comedians, DJs, producers. So go have a rummage in them archives and spin a few and see what you reckon. Big thanks again to Tom. Thanks to you lot for listening. I'll be back next time. Remember, your one-stop shop for everything to do with this is www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Be excellent to each other, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.